Hello and welcome to Own Your Health with me, Katie Brindle. And today I have one of my all-time favourite people finally joining me in the studio, Dr. Gemma Newman, who is a personal friend of mine and also an esteemed colleague. And what I'm so excited about today is that you come at medicine from a Western discipline, but you talk exactly the same language as me. So it's a real question of East meets West. So you've written two fantastic books. Should we just talk about that first? You came in via plant-based medicine and now you've got your latest book, Get Well, Stay Well, which you launched last January, I seem to remember, in the pouring rain.
Yes, you did. You valiantly came out to support me and we were having all sorts of fun that night.
It was amazing. So tell me all about what took you out of the GP clinic with your sort of 7 minutes per person into this world of holistic healthcare, which presumably you're prescribing as alongside everything else.
Yeah, so it's been a journey. I love helping people. It's my passion.
You'd be a really bad doctor if you didn't.
Well, you'd be surprised. But no, I think most people at their core, when they go into a caring profession, they want to help people.
Yeah, they
right?
do.
And you can become jaded over the years when you realise you're not doing that. Mm. And for me, I think it was an amalgamation of so many different factors. Basically, I wasn't looking after myself in my early days of being a doctor. I was having lots of late nights and night shifts and exhausted, and I wasn't functioning at my best. Mm. And I realised I needed to look after my own health if I was going to have a full career in medicine. The other thing was, you know, I was in my clinic. I love being a GP. But I was feeling particularly kind of in a contemplative mood on the drive home one night. And I just thought, I don't know if I've actually really helped anyone today. Mm. You're sort of tinkering with their medications, a bit of a higher blood pressure tablet, a bit of a higher tablet for their diabetes, and then, you know, reviewing them in a few weeks. And I just felt like I wasn't doing what I wanted to do to help them. Mm. And I didn't quite know where to go with that. But I've always been looking for things to improve people's health. And so nutrition came first because people are really quite open to changing what they eat.
That's
three
so
times
true.
A day. You know, I realised that eating more plants was highly anti-inflammatory. Mm. And I also realised, looking through a lot of the scientific literature, that it can be extremely helpful for improving things like diabetes and heart disease and cancer, which are our three major causes of death and disability in the Western world. So I thought, I'm onto something here.
And not just prevention of.
Exactly.
Because that's the other thing that you're so big on, is
huge,
not just
prevention.
The cure. Because the other issue about going to the doctor is we tend to go to the doctor once something's getting a bit of a foothold. Mm. Because before that, we tend to get, oh, it's nothing.
Yeah, and also on a personal level, my husband started to be plant-based before I did. Mm. And he was doing incredibly well with his marathon training because he was running marathons and getting injured and inflamed. And so he thought, right, I'm going to go on a plant-based diet. He'd read Rich Roll's book, Finding Ultra, and he'd read Scott Jurek's book, who's arguably one of the best ultra marathon ultra runners in the world. Mm. I was watching him with curiosity.
Yeah.
This is a strange turn of events.
Yeah.
And he managed to cut his marathon running time by an hour and 10 minutes.
No way.
It was wild. And I thought, oh, maybe that was one of the things that actually prompted my research into health, because I knew the environmental stuff about eating more plants. I knew that, you know, a lot of what the animal agriculture does is, you know, on a large scale, is extremely damaging. But I didn't really feel it enough, you know, in myself to think, well, I'm actually going to do something about it on a personal level.
But and on a professional level.
So on a professional level as well.
To your clinic.
Exactly, because on a professional level, it's very different. You know, you have to really understand the data. You have to understand the benefits. You have to understand how it could fit into someone's life. There's a lot of different factors. Mm. And so I gradually gained the confidence to try it myself, to try it with my loved ones, to read more research around it. And then I got really excited because when I tried it with my patients, it was like magic, you know, whether we're getting a lot of great results, you know, improving.
Can I just, just quickly, that you see, when I have my patients, I get minimum half an hour, up to 2 hours with my patients. I have the luxury of that. You're in the NHS system, and thank God that you are. How many minutes do you get per person?
10 minutes.
And how on earth do you manage? I mean, you don't even talk fast. I talk really fast, but you talk like normal. So how do you do all this?
You know, it's funny you should say that, Katie. Often in my consultations, I talk less. Well, the thing is, I get them to talk to me.
Right.
Because often they tell me clues in what they're saying about their lives that I can then work with. And, you know, they've often got a lot of the answers within their own bodies and minds, but they haven't quite put those pieces together. Mm. And so, your question, how do you get them to do it? Well, obviously, I'm not going to be able to speak to everybody in depth about all the things they could possibly be doing, hence the books.
Yeah.
But what I can do is plant a seed. And what I can do is suggest that I can give them some accountability by seeing them again. And although I've only got 10 minutes, I actually have a multitude of 10 minutes if I need them.
Oh, that's a good point. Because it's free as well.
Because it's free for them, obviously, at the point of entry. So, you know, I can say, you know what, you know, these are the resources that you might be interested in. And then if they say they are, I can give them some resources and then we can take it from there.
And of course, in this day and age, what's so amazing about you is your very high profile on social media, because you're putting so much of this onto your social platforms.
Yeah.
And indeed, of course, have been on many podcasts. So please, please, guys, if for some weird reason you've been on the moon recently and you've never heard of Dr. Gemma, as I affectionately like to call you, you've got, you know, you're well over the 100 mark on all your social media platforms, and you're disseminating these brilliant books into very bite-sized pieces and making it very achievable for people. So there's lots of resource right there for people to go to. But back to your 10 minutes and
minutes. So basically, I listen.
Yeah.
I look for hooks and I look for things that they want to change, things that they feel within them that they can change.
Mm.
I look after a population of people that are not affluent. So they don't have the funds to go to see someone privately often.
No, or buy organic.
Or
include some of these foods in their diet.
Or see any other kind of practitioner that they'd have to pay for.
Yeah.
And so I need to sort of see, well, where are they in their life right now? What can they afford to buy? What have they got the mental bandwidth to think about?
Mm.
And then I just go in the flow of where they say they can make little changes.
Mm.
So, it doesn't have to be all at once. But when I have had patients that have been able to make big changes, because obviously people all need to buy food.
Yeah, we do need to eat.
And, you know, if you can buy lots of whole foods, vegetables, fruits, whole grains, legumes, lentils, chickpeas, oats, herbs, spices, nuts and seeds, tofu. Like, you can buy things, some of them they've never heard of, but some of them, you know, they're basic staples in any kind of cuisine. You know, it's fascinating, because there was a recent study into the different kinds of foods that people buy and their expense. And I think a lot of people are worried that eating more plants is more expensive. But when you eat whole plant foods, it's actually less expensive, especially when you consider many people sort of, you might be buying more specialty high quality meats and so on. They can be a lot more expensive because they reflect the cost.
Yeah,
you know,
because things like lentils, lentils are cheap.
Exactly, bulk buy the lentils and the chickpeas.
Yeah.
You know, all the different kinds of beans. And there's many different kinds of lentils, of course. But also, people don't always know how to even begin with these things. You know, if they've never even cooked that way, it can be a bit of a challenge. So that's why, you know,
and that's the book.
Yeah, it's the books and the recipes and all of that stuff.
And then you progressed onto the book which is sitting in front of me now, which is the Get Well, Stay Well book, with the key thing in it, which is the gloves.
Yes.
And now this is where you and I really, really, now we're like two Trivial Pursuits triangles going into the epicenter. So let's talk about gloves.
Yes.
Because gloves is brilliant. Gloves takes the food conversation into a whole new territory. If it's not just what you eat, it's all the other stuff too.
It does. And I want it to be simple. So gloves stands for gratitude, love, outside, veggies, exercise and sleep. Now, obviously, there's a lot more to it. You know, I go into that with
the whole
chapter.
Yeah. I mean, look, the book's quite big. It is. Yeah. But it's very, very readable. And I don't have a huge amount of time to read books, but I read this one cover to cover, not just because you're my friend, but because it was brilliant. And I was like, oh, my God. Then I had to put it away, because I find as a channel, if I start reading other people too much, then I start to absorb it too much and then I'm spewing it back out again. So I have to kind of stay in lane. But, you know, I read it.
You can spew it as much as you like.
Well, I mean, I do, but then it starts to plagiarise. So I'm like, well, hang on a minute. But the thing is, you go into each one in chapter. It's literally chapter and verse here.
Yeah.
So you go into each one in turn. But
I do.
For the purposes of this,
I just want to say, you know, what I wanted to create was a wellness Bible that people could pick up and get the idea that their wellness was in their own hands.
Yeah, which it is.
And
power to the people.
Yeah, and that they can have some sort of an understanding of where they want that destiny to go. And, you know, with food, it's like fuel for a car, isn't it? You know, if you've got a petrol car, you fill it with petrol and then off you go. That's great. You fill it up three times a day when you eat. But, you know, is your windscreen working? Are your windscreen wipers on? You know, is there a bump in the road? And do you even know where you're going? Have you even got your sat nav? So there's so many different parts of knowing how to feel good in your body, mind and soul. that I really wanted to cover in a way that was accessible, because not everybody has a an idea about liking things spiritual. Not everybody has an idea of liking things that seem to be kind of unconventional or outside of their physical body. But I think actually it's a really important thing for people to reflect on.
Well, interestingly, obviously, you could have organised these letters in all sorts of different ways, and I'm sure you've spent ages playing with them, but you start with gratitude. That's really interesting, because that takes me back to my nan, which is manners maketh man, and manners are one of the most important things. And as parents myself, we were on manners with my kids. And interestingly, many of the school reports of my children, which I find kind of I'm proud of and also quite sad about, is that they always said, no matter what else they said, that they were always very polite children. And then they'd go off to say, but, you know, whatever. But, you know, they were always polite. And I thought, well, that's sad that they need to point that out. And unless, yeah, I just thought that was quite sad, because actually gratitude is, in my opinion, the most important thing. It raises your energy frequency instantly. And being grateful for things is a surefire way for the universe to give you more. But you start with it. So tell me why, because that might be something that a lot of people, especially, as you said, the demographic coming into your clinic may think, what?
Well, exactly.
What? I've come to you with IBS. What are you talking about?
Well, I know. But actually, I want to pick something up from what you just said.
Yeah.
Do you equate gratitude with politeness?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, I guess so, because it's manners.
And why is manners related to gratitude?
Because you say thank you.
Oh, I see. So I'm thinking about, yeah, so you say thank you to others in your life, and then you are basically bringing more goodness back, because you're showing your appreciation for them.
And funnily enough, maybe I'm taking it too far, but I say thank you to myself a lot. So funny enough, we're going to be talking about one of my favourite things, which is the Ho'oponopono prayer, which I talk about. Oh, I love it.
It's a lovely prayer.
I'm obsessed with it.
I've written about that in my book,
Casey. Of course, I know you have. And actually, I didn't nick that from you. I knew that was one of them anyway, but I noticed that too. Yeah. But the Ho'oponopono prayer is one of those things that I love to do when I'm dealing with a confrontation with somebody else, for example. But I use it on myself, because I am very aware in this nature of work that we abuse our bodies so much. We take them for granted so much, and we're just kind of in battle all the time. And it's really important to say thank you and I'm sorry. So it's for anyone listening who's never heard what we talk about. The prayer is, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. And its origin has come from sort of conflict resolvement, basically. And it's a really easy way to solve kind of conflict. But actually, the first instance for me is I use it with myself.
Yes.
So each time I eat, I always do a bit of a Ho'oponopono prayer as my grace to say, because it's a, I always say to hook something to something you do. And I eat three times a day because I need to eat. So I say the prayer before I eat every time, because I'm honouring.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And also I notice how my energy shifts when I thank myself. So gratitude to me is definitely down to politeness, and is definitely down to shifting the energy frequency of my body out of, say, fight or flight and into respect of myself. And then I'll project it into areas of conflict in my life if whatever's going on, there's always something.
Well, that's really beautiful. And I love the fact that you've hooked that onto something that you do every day. And I think it's lovely that as a way of being grateful for food as well. So bringing it in before you eat, that's a really lovely idea. Well, I mean, you're right. When I see my patients, they have many situations in their lives for which it would be extremely hard to feel grateful.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of suffering. I've seen that every day in clinic.
Yeah.
And that brings me a lot of humility, because I think, you know, the position that I'm in to be able to help them through that situation is just, it's a hugely privileged thing
to
be a part of their life in that sense. But yeah, there's a lot of things that quite rightly feel absolutely horrific. And so the question is, well, how are you supposed to feel grateful when you're going through something like that? So for me, it's really about helping people to understand the things that they can feel grateful for about themselves when they are going through a struggle. I mean, arguably, it's one of the few things that we can take from suffering, isn't it? The idea that we can understand ourselves a bit more, we can make decisions about ourselves and the people around us through the suffering that will ultimately help others and in so doing help ourselves. And that's something that is not really generally talked about, but is one of the biggest ways that people who have managed to overcome suffering feel better. And I think sometimes the conclusions that we draw when we go through suffering are they can really take our lives in very different directions. You know, we can focus on the emotions of fear, and we can focus on the emotions of lack, or we can focus on the emotions of gratitude and abundance. And that is hard to do when you are in the middle of pain.
Yeah.
But interestingly, when you're aiming to focus your attention on gratitude and on love towards others or towards yourself, then it actually diminishes your body's pain response.
Yes.
So it actually improves.
And that's proven.
Yes, absolutely. And that's something I've talked about in the book and the studies to show that. So,
yeah.
You know, because it's really hard to feel gratitude and pain at the same time. And so, you know, when you're living with a painful condition, which many people do, and many more people in the modern world are actually, many things are really on the rise, including, you know, we were talking earlier about things like bowel cancer, but also things like endometriosis and fibroids. But helping people to navigate that in a way that they can feel better about themselves, I think that's something that is, you know, hugely important.
So did you put it at the top purely because the word glove just kind of was the best word, or because it was the most important thing to you?
It was the most important thing to me. I wanted to find a simple acronym that helped people understand that their emotional world drives their physical world.
Oh, I mean, I cannot believe that you're a Western doctor saying that, because there's not many people from the Western background who would agree with that.
Well, you know, I think you'd be surprised. I mean, there must be a lot of people in psychology that would know that, because they'll see people over and over again that come back with similar patterns and that come back with various physical ailments that are linked to those you know, mental patterns. So it's not a complete reach to come to those conclusions, I think, if you really think about it. But it's something that people feel scared to talk about because they don't really know exactly how to resolve it or how to help people with it often. And so they feel like, oh, is there evidence for that? And can I say that? And if I do, what's going to happen? But there is plenty of evidence to show that these simple wellness practices, things like being in gratitude as an intention more and more, and living and acting from a place of love more and more, can also improve our physical health and our physical body. And it's amazing to, you know, to be able to share that message in a way that people can understand.
Well, interestingly, that the next letter is love. We may not necessarily have time to go through every single letter. And guys, if you're now sitting on the edge of your seat thinking, oh my God, this is so interesting, which it is, just buy the book. Look at the social media content, because, as I've said, you disseminate it down. But so you go to love. We're moving in the 21st century to a race of heart-centered beings. I mean, especially with all the AI, because people sort of say, well, what happens to humans with AI? And I think, well, AI can't mirror love.
Expressions of love, I think, is what life is about. And I think when we're on our deathbed contemplating all the things that we've done in our lives, when we've lived them from a place of love, we don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
Whatever we've been through, whatever we've suffered. And leading from that place is sometimes really hard to do. But again, coming back to the science around why it's so helpful, you know, there are so many ways in which you can both express love towards yourself and to others that improve your physical health. And I go into that as well in more detail. But so in that chapter, I talk about things like forgiveness letters. And there's an emotional healing technique I talk about where, you know, you can do a visualization where you let go of certain resentments that build up in the heart. Because I think often you talked about energy earlier and about, you know, those sort of energetic frequencies. Well, it's true that the electromagnetic field of the heart is, you know, much stronger than the electromagnetic field of the brain. You can measure that with ECGs and with EEGs. And so, you know, if you have an expanded heart and expanded emotional space, then it allows for the hormones of your body and all of the ions that go back and forth through various cells to function at their very best. And that's a great thing.
Oh, it's so interesting. And you see, what I love about Chinese medicine is that for us, all of the emotions of the body are stored and are managed by each of the organs of the body. And the heart, we I wasn't around when they created all this stuff. But the heart is the commander of the body. So it receives the command of the heavens and in turn commands the body. And now you're just talking about the heart space. And I love it so much.
Well, I've been reluctant in the past to talk about my Reiki practice, but...
We've got to... Oh, my gosh. Yes, sorry, Reiki practice. Okay. We have to bring that... No, don't be reluctant. This is the space. Talk about your Reiki practice. It's so brilliant. This is why you're such an icon. Go on, please. No, it's true. Dr. Gemma, you saw her here first, except you didn't. But we've only had the podcast going. It's taken you this long to get you into the studio, but anyway.
So I do Jikiden Reiki. Jikiden means directly passed down. It's Japanese Reiki.
Yes.
And my teacher was telling me about the importance of giving it. And, you know, the way they describe it is, Chiyoko Sensei, the lady that actually started the Jikiden Reiki practice and the tradition, she just described Reiki as love. She said, it's love. You're just giving love.
Yep.
And when your body is attuned to that loving frequency, then you're able to help people in the sense of their physical and emotional healing through that.
So true. It's so true because it is true.
And it's interesting because when you look at different traditions, when you look at Shintoism from the Japanese perspective, Taoism, and you understand a bit more about how in Chinese medicine, obviously, meridians are involved and you've got the chakras. When you think about Ayurveda, you know, they're all, I believe, ways of expressing life force energy.
Yes.
And, you know, and being able to bring it forth. And I suppose in the Western paradigm, what would you call it? Mitochondrial function, perhaps?
I don't know. I'm outside of my comfort zone when you start talking Western medicine. In the Eastern medicine, I'm like, yes. I don't know. What do you call it?
So, I mean, I've been sort of, I found ways that I like to describe it. And I like to think about it in terms of electromagnetic frequencies.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, if you're giving from a place of love, then your emotions are in a more expanded state, which means that your electromagnetic frequencies are higher, which means that you're able to, you know, be able to help induce that healing in others around you. Mm. You know what it feels like when you get a hug, you know, and you know when the atmosphere changes in a room. Mm. That's all from energy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I suppose on a very basic level, whether you believe that life force energy exists or whether you don't, there are studies to show that Reiki is effective for things like pain relief and coping with chemotherapy. Lots of high profile cancer centres use it. And there's studies to show that it can be as effective as physiotherapy for things like disc prolapse pain. You know, so there's a number of different studies to show that it can objectively be helpful. But as to why, obviously people will have their own ideas about that, whether they think it's something like a practitioner effect or a placebo or listening to some nice relaxing music or someone's giving you that one-to-one attention. You know, whatever your belief about why it works, ultimately it still works. You know, with all the stresses that are on the system as it is now, it's very easy to feel overwhelmed. It's easy to feel as though you're not really doing something to help. You feel jaded, you feel frustrated. If you're able to bring that heart space into and that awareness of what you are hoping to give to that person into your consultations, then it helps you to keep going. I mean, I love my NHS work.
To me anyway, the NHS is such a national treasure. I know there's lots and lots of controversy and people saying all sorts of things, but just from the heart, it's like, it's so brilliant to have a system which is there where price isn't the issue, and that you have a level of service with amazing people working in it. I just love it. We live in this amazing moment now in history where sort of it was religion and then it was science, and now everything's kind of merging into one, and now science is proving religion and vice versa, sort of. But where are you on that? And that's going to be my last question.
Where am I on that?
Well, yes, because science and faith and belief and spirituality and divinity are all sort of mixing together. It's no longer an either or.
I think you're very right, and I think that many people in the world are not quite there yet.
Right.
So for me, it was important to write a book that didn't tell people about spirituality directly, because, you know, it's not something that everybody resonates with.
No, and it can sound preachy.
Much as plant-based diets often sound preechy, you know.
Not yours.
No, not mine.
Yours is great. Yours is really interesting.
Thank you, Katie. No, so for me, I wanted it to be accessible to anyone and everyone. So, you know, writing it simply but also providing the data was important for those reasons. I wanted to be able to have something that people could hold on to, even if they were thinking, well, I don't believe that there's anything in terms of energy. I don't believe that there's anything other than what I can see in front of me.
Mm.
Well, what I do know from the research that I did for the book is that, you know, even what you can see in front of you, that miraculous body that you have, you know, the workings inside are truly incredible, whether you believe that it was from another being that helped to create you, or whether it was from a single-celled organism that your dad gave your mum, and then bingo, you're here. I mean, the chances of that happening are so remote.
Oh, it's mind-blowing when you start to think, if my dad hadn't met my mum, and if my mum hadn't dumped her boyfriend and blah, blah, blah. You know, sorry, divulging my poor late mother's dating history.
I feel like I want to know more about your late mother.
Oh,
she
my late mother
amazing.
Was lovely. Oh, my God. Okay, so Dr. Gemma, as I love to call you, that was the most... I know, it is. It's Dr. Gemma Newman, but your Dr. Gemma to me, and you always will be, because, like, you know, I'm like, you're like, look, she's so cool and she's my friend, which makes me good too. So I just want to thank you for coming in. You are just such a font of knowledge. Anybody listening or watching today's podcast, I urge you to read Dr. Gemma's books. They're both brilliant. Okay, I've read both of them and they're both brilliant. And actually, I had to put them down because otherwise I'm in breach of plagiarism. I had to do the same with Jasmine Hemsley. I was like, oh my God. And Kirsty Gallagher as well. I was like, oh my God, stay away, stay away. It's going to infiltrate your world too much. It's too close. But it was such a pleasure to talk and listen to you. You are just such an eminent figure in your field, and it's been an honour to have you on the show. And please come back, because
I will,
lovely.
Katie. I would love to come back, because there's so much more we can talk
about.
I
know. And then we need Victoria sat here, and then we need Jasmine or Mira over here as well. So, you know, this is going to brew this year. Vix is rolling her eyes. We go, bloody hell, I've got to organise all that. So,
I do want to say thank you, Katie. I feel like you are an effervescent and knowledgeable force of nature. And I'm so honoured to be your friend and to come and chat with you and your lovely, lovely audience.
Oh, thank you. Well, everyone, Dr. Gemma Newman herself, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you very soon.
Yes.